This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Final efforts at diplomacy have collapsed at the United Nations. A U.S.-led attack on Iraq appears almost certain, perhaps within days. President Bush will address the nation tonight at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. He's expected to issue an ultimatum to Saddam Hussein, saying the only way to avoid war is to accept exile. United Nations staff and weapons inspectors are leaving Baghdad, along with many diplomats and journalists. 24 hours ago, President Bush was in the Azores for an emergency summit with British Prime Minister Tony Blair and Spain's Prime Minister José María Aznar in a last-ditch attempt to reach a diplomatic resolution. But this morning in Washington, Secretary of State Colin Powell said that the time for diplomacy has passed. In New York, a U.S.-backed Security Council resolution that's set today as the deadline for Iraq to disarm has been withdrawn. Secretary General Kofi Annan said it was a sad day for everybody and that he'd hoped Iraq would have complied. In London, a member of Prime Minister Blair's cabinet has resigned and Parliament will debate Iraq tomorrow. We're going to bring you the latest on all these developments and, of course, bring you any news that happens while we're on the air. Later in the program, we'll talk with Leon Panetta and Richard Allen, who both served as senior White House officials, about what may be going on behind the scenes. And we want to hear from you. What are your concerns as war with Iraq appears imminent? What do you want to hear President Bush say tonight? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We start first with the president's speech tonight, and joining us now from Washington is NPR's Mara Liasson. Hi, Mara.
Hi, Neil.
Any idea beyond the ultimatum to Saddam Hussein what the president may say tonight?
No. Well, he certainly is going to lay out the reasons he feels military action is necessary, the reason he feels diplomacy ended because the United Nations failed to live up to its responsibility to disarm Saddam Hussein. We might or might not hear the president giving Saddam Hussein and his family members a deadline of 48 or 72 hours to leave the country or risk military action. That's still under debate. I do think you'll hear the president warn humanitarian workers and journalists to leave the country. As a matter of fact, Ari Fleischer was saying this morning, Iraq is not a safe place to be, and he's actually been, other administration officials have been sending off-the-record warnings to journalists to as recommendations to get their colleagues out as soon as possible. What we don't know if we're going to hear, but I think a lot of people will be listening for tonight, is the president finally laying out some information about the costs and risks of this war, which he hasn't done yet. But clearly, President Bush's political future now depends on what happens in Iraq.
Indeed. Yesterday he said today would be a moment of truth for the world. It's also certainly a moment of truth for President Bush.
No doubt about it. It's not just the war. It's the occupation. This war might be short and relatively costless. Certainly the Pentagon seems to think it has a good chance to be that. But a lot of things can go wrong. This is a war that President Bush is undertaking without the stamp of political legitimacy that the United Nations Security Council could have given him and that he tried to get. Now, there are some people, certainly a lot of European leaders, believe that he just went through the motions of going to the UN. He never really wanted to avoid war. But we have had a debate about the merits of preventive war versus containment, and we're now going to see whether President Bush's vision, which is that preventive war is necessary, not preemptive war, not to preempt something that's an attack that's imminent against the U.S., but something that might happen in the future, is going to be accepted by the world and will be successful.
There was another big round of demonstrations in Washington and other places this past weekend. Today, dozens of protesters were arrested outside the Capitol. There was a disruption by protesters at the oil exchange in London. Is any of this registering with the president?
I think it is registering. I think the White House does understand that they have to make a better case to rally world opinion. Certainly, the effort to rally the opinions of world leaders failed utterly at the UN. Even leaders that President Bush supposedly had a great relationship with, like Vladimir Putin of Russia, that didn't work. And I think you will see the president starting tonight, and I think you'll see a full court press of other top White House officials in the days to come trying to rally world opinion, trying to change world opinion. I think the White House is counting on a kind of natural rallying effect for American public opinion, which happens in every war, and you can see it in the polls. I think it's already beginning to happen now. But if this war is longer than expected, and if the occupation is more difficult than expected, I think they're going to need the support of public opinion over time.
As he prepares for what will be a critical speech tonight, who's the president listening to? Is he reaching out to special people?
Well, he certainly is working with his speechwriters. Karen Hughes, who was a top aide to the president who went back to Texas several months ago, traveled with him to the Azores. She's working on the speech. Michael Gerson, who's the chief speechwriter, is working on it. And I think the president's mind is made up. I think the president consults with the people that he usually consults with, Vice President Dick Cheney, who is probably the single most important advisor during this entire episode, Condoleezza Rice, the national security advisor. And the president has been described time and time again as being quite calm, quite determined, quite convinced that what he's doing is the right thing. One thing you are seeing in the last couple of days is a lot of bitterness, attacks on France, Secretary Powell pointing out that there will be damage to the French-U.S. relationship, at least in the short term, pointing people to the commercial relationships that France has had with Iraq. And I think that one of the things that makes this decision to go to war so much more tragic is the sense that there is so much betrayal all around. Mm-hmm. The U.S. feels France shouldn't have voted for that first resolution warning of serious consequences if it didn't really mean it. European leaders feel the U.S. always meant to go to war for regime change, even though it said to the U.N. it wanted U.N. support for disarmament. So there's big, big rifts between the United States and its traditional allies, and we don't know what the fallout of that will be after the war.
Thanks, Mara, and take care of that cold.
Thank you, Neil.
NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson, who will be covering President Bush's address tonight. We turn now to the diplomatic aspect of today's events. Michael Elliott, editor-at-large at Time magazine, joins us from his office in New York. And Michael, always good to have you on the program.
Good to be here, Neil.
Yesterday, President Bush said the Security Council had until today to adopt a resolution to force Saddam Hussein to give up his weapons of mass destruction. In this morning's news conference with Colin Powell, it was made clear that diplomacy had already, the window for diplomacy had already closed. Any idea of what happened? Was there a last-ditch attempt last night?
Well, I think there were lots of consultations last night, but I think that essentially what happened is that it became clear, as it has been for the last 2 weeks, that any resolution that they felt gave an ultimatum before early use of force would be vetoed by the French and probably the Russians too. And when it became clear that nothing could be crafted that got over that hurdle, there was really no point in continuing down the diplomatic track. Mm.
During the news conference this morning, Secretary Powell spoke of his frustration with the Security Council and talked about the future viability of the United Nations. Let's listen to a brief excerpt from what he had to say.
The UN is an important institution, and it will survive, and the United States will continue to be an important member of the United Nations and its various organizations, but clearly this is a test, in my judgment, that the Security Council did not meet.
In his speech to the UN that started this whole process last September, President Bush said if the Security Council failed to act, it would reduce the UN to a debating society. What's the take-home message here?
Well, I think the take-home message is that Colin Powell is a very disappointed man, and I think the demeanor that he had this morning and the words that he used really kind of speak well to his own personal failure, frankly. He is the person who has been arguing within the councils of the administration that an international approach to Iraq, working through the UN, was the right way to go. He had a high water mark of his career, one of the great moments in the storied career last fall when the Security Council, by a vote of 15-0, passed Resolution 1441, and I don't think that in his wildest dreams he ever imagined that 4.5 months later he would be at a situation where the U.S. and its allies couldn't even put a new resolution before the Security Council because it wasn't going to get the votes in support of it. So I think this is a matter of great personal disappointment to him. Now, President Bush himself at the meeting in the Azores yesterday went out of his way to say that he anticipated a significant role for the UN in rebuilding in Iraq. So the administration are going out of their way to say that this doesn't make the UN completely irrelevant and past it. But there are wounds here that are going to take quite a long time to heal. And I think it would not be foolish to assume that this administration is going to be very wary of pursuing its initiatives through the medium of the UN Security Council in the future.
Which, obviously, the next issue coming up would be North Korea. So this is
no small thing. That's a great irony, Neil, because on North Korea, the administration is saying, and saying as loudly as it possibly can, that it wants the approach to be multilateral. It's not necessarily saying that this has to be done through the Security Council, but it's certainly saying we cannot do this on our own. We've got to do it with the help of others in the region. Sooner or later, these eggs that have been broken will be put back together. Whether they'll be put back together so that they're pristine and perfect is another matter. But I think that the administration's confidence in its ability to find a way to use the Security Council for the purposes of disarming Iraq and others has been dealt a severe blow. Now, you can argue this round and you can argue it flat. Could the administration have handled the effort since last fall better? Yes, I think it could have done. But what the administration will take away from this is that nothing that they might have done would have led to a different conclusion.
As you suggested earlier, there were many members of the administration who suggested early on that the United Nations was not the right way to go. Secretary Powell was arguing vociferously that this was the appropriate way to go, and this has now ended in shambles. What does that do to his position within the administration?
Well, I think his position in the administration has always been a curious one. He is a person of extraordinary stature, not just in this country but in the world, a man whose biography is second to none, whose resume is absolutely amazing. At the same time, he has often looked in this administration as if he did not have many natural supporters at the Pentagon or, for that matter, in the White House, too. I guess Powell's defenders would say that he was on a hiding to nothing here from the start, because the argument would be, and I think there's some merit to it, that the president from day one set two completely incompatible policies running. One, a military buildup in the Gulf, which was predicated on the assumption that the only way in which Saddam would be disarmed would be at the point of a gun. And secondly, a diplomatic initiative at the United Nations, and that sooner or later they were bound to decline, no matter what Colin Powell did. But he I think, is bound to be criticized by some people for convincing the president that he could do this through the UN, internationally, multilaterally, and then failing to deliver. I don't think it's all Powell's fault. By any means, but there will no doubt be some people who will be happy to throw some rotten eggs at him, saying, see, we told you so back in the fall.
NPR is covering this and other stories throughout the day. Later today on All Things Considered, a report from NPR's Vicky O'Hara on the failure of diplomacy at the United Nations, and NPR's Mike Schuster talks with Michelle Norris from Kuwait about where U.S. troops are situated and their preparedness for a war with Iraq. That's all later this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News, and of course, stay tuned to many of these stations for coverage of the president's address to the nation and the world tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. That's 5 p.m. Pacific time. Again, on many of these NPR stations. Here on Talk of the Nation, we're discussing today's rapidly moving events leading to a possible war with Iraq. When we come back, we'll take some of your calls, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address, TOTN@NPR.org. Well, still with us is Michael Elliott of Time Magazine. We'll also check in with John Andrews of The Economist in Paris. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the events that are moving quickly today from the White House to the UN to Europe and ultimately to Iraq. Our guest is Michael Elliott, editor-at-large at Time magazine. And what are your concerns as war with Iraq appears imminent? What do you want to hear the president say when he speaks to the nation tonight? Our phone number is 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And, Michael, before we let you go, as the president approaches this speech tonight, the opinion polls, as Mara Liasson was mentioning earlier, seem to show the American public beginning to, you know, show the familiar, back the forces effect. But should the president read this as support for his position?
Well, it's a very good question, I think it's a really difficult one to answer. I mean, I think there is going to be an inevitable rallying around the flag, rallying around the support of the troops who are putting their lives at risk. I think exactly the same thing has been evident in the UK, incidentally. I think there have been some polls there that have tended to support Tony Blair's position rather than undermine it in the last couple of days. But I think you do raise an interesting point, Neil, because I am not sure, when we look back over the last 6 months, whether this administration ever really anticipated the degree of nervousness ranging from outright opposition to military action that would be evident not just in this country, but more particularly all over the world. I mean, it is an extraordinary thing that even in the countries that are going to back the U.S. In military action, and I'm thinking here of Britain, of Spain, of Australia, significant ally, public opinion polls are running astonishingly against war. And I don't myself think that that degree of opposition to the war was ever satisfactorily factored in to the decision-making tree by this administration.
Thanks, Michael, very much.
Okay, Neil. Talk to you soon.
Michael Elliott, editor-at-large at Time magazine, was with us from his office in New York. Let's go across the Atlantic now to see about developments there. John Andrews is the Paris bureau chief for The Economist magazine, and good to have you back on the program.
Nice to talk to you, Neil.
The first fallout has already hit in London. Tony Blair's one of his senior cabinet ministers has resigned. What can you tell us about that?
Well, it's not a complete surprise. Robin Cook has been against the idea of going to war without a UN resolution ever since the beginning. And although, you know, we call him a senior cabinet minister, the fact is that he was leader of the House of Commons, which is a job with prestige, but not with a great deal of power. His real power was when he was Foreign Secretary, and that was taken away from him 2 years ago, and he was replaced by Jack Straw. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, he represents an important strain within the Labour Party. He is very intelligent, he's very articulate, and he represents the soul of the Labour Party, but not of old Labour, so much also of new Labour. And that's important for Tony Blair, because the defection of Robin Cook, I think, damages Tony Blair to a certain extent.
As you mentioned, Robin Cook, well known to Americans as the British Foreign Secretary during the war in Kosovo. There's another minister who suggested she might resign, Claire Short. Are these going to add up to weaken Tony Blair?
We don't yet know if Claire Short will resign, but it seems to be pretty likely that she will. And I think the impact on Tony Blair will have been softened a little bit in that these resignations have been predicted for some time. But fundamentally, the problem for Tony Blair is that he will be seen within the Labour Party and within the political arena in Britain as no longer walking on water. You know, and somehow his aura will have been damaged, I think, permanently. Now, whether that translates into his defeat as a prime minister is entirely another matter. I personally think that his chances are still pretty good. If one assumes that war happens and that the war is over fairly quickly and successfully, with not too much, for to use that dreadful euphemism, collateral damage, then I think Tony Blair can have said, he'll be able to say that he's made a moral case for war, the war has happened, Saddam Hussein is away, the world is a safer place. And then he can start to rebuild his bridges with his own party. But the fact is that in the interim, he would have alienated a very large minority, and perhaps even a majority, of his own party. And that is dangerous for him when you get towards the next election, because in the meantime, before the next election, the real challenge for Tony Blair will be to deliver better public services to the British electorate, and there isn't much sign of that coming through at the moment.
Is Prime Minister Blair in any difficulty in tomorrow's debate on Iraq in Parliament?
He could be in a very embarrassing position if his own party, if enough people in his own party vote against him. The last time there was a vote on this issue, 122 members of his own party voted against him. If that number rises to 165, then he will win the vote only because of the support of the Conservative opposition. And that will be an embarrassment.
Wanted to read you an email we got from Shirley Allen in Ohio. In my opinion, she writes, the people in European countries are afraid of terrorists in the event their governments vote to wage war against Iraq. There are large Muslim populations there. But someone, she says, has to be courageous enough to confront Saddam and his weapons, and I guess the coalition of the willing will have to step up to the plate. Is that an issue, particularly in France?
Yes, it is. I think perhaps your listener put it slightly the wrong way around. What the French in particular have argued is that if there is a war in Iraq, and at the same time the Arab-Israeli problem is ignored, then these two factors will foment more and more terrorism, will give birth to more and more Osama bin Ladens. And basically the French position, and shared by an awful lot of Europeans, is that the Bush administration has been either obtuse or perhaps intellectually irresponsible in not dealing with the roots of terrorism, and instead picking on Iraq, an admitted danger, but one which is surely not imminent in the French mind at least, and in making a connection between Iraq and terrorism. To the French, and I think the general European view, even, I have to say, in Britain, I think this link has simply not been established.
There, as you know, plenty of scorn to go around. The United States has been rather blunt in the past couple of days about heaping blame on France. The French are beginning to respond, though President Chirac said on 60 Minutes last night that France remains a strong ally and expects friendly relations to continue. But behind the scenes, there's an awful lot of poison in the atmosphere.
I think that's very true. I'm personally surprised that Chirac has gone so far, Chirac and his foreign minister, Dominique de Villepin, they've gone so far along a particular route that they don't really seem to have any exit strategy. I mean, the fact of the matter is that France needs America rather more than America needs France in the long term. And I think Chirac was being rather insouciant in his interview with CNN and CBS, saying that, we're great friends of America, etc., and there will be no long-term damage. I know the American people, said Chirac. Well, I'm not sure that he knows the American people quite as well as perhaps he thinks he does.
Let's take a call. Beth is on the line with us in Brush Prairie, Washington.
Hi, Neil. Thank you for having me on the air today.
Sure.
I'm really concerned about the long-term effect that this war is going to have with our international allies. There are so many people standing up saying we don't agree with what we're doing, with what the U.S. is doing in pursuing this war against Iraq. Has President Bush, or is there any information about how we're going to repair the damage to these relationships?
John Andrews?
Well, I think that's very true, and I think one of the problems, actually, is the problem of body language and the way George Bush reacts when he's outside America. He cuts a very poor figure in Europe. I remember seeing him here when he came to the Elysee Palace and had a press conference with Jacques Chirac last year, and he was pretty embarrassing. I mean, if I had been American, I think I would have cringed a little bit. The folksy, homespun, you're with us or against us, appears very simplistic and also somewhat rude in Europe. And so I think, that counts to quite a lot. The favorite American politician for the Europeans, as I think Mike Elliott mentioned, is Colin Powell. And I think one of the puzzles of the last few weeks is that Dominique de Villepin, the French foreign minister, chose to ambush Colin Powell at the United Nations with his threat of a veto coming right out of the blue. That caused a lot of bad blood when perhaps it wasn't necessary. But I think your caller is absolutely right. There is a lot of ill feeling around. It'll be difficult to resolve it. The Europeans, and I think others in the world, will tend to see this as a part of a sequence. If you go back to the Kyoto climate agreement being scrapped, the International Criminal Court being scrapped as well, I mean, these things all add up in the end. There is a feeling that, you know, you're with us or against us is a bit too brutal and harsh a way to manage the world, that we need a rather more multipolar world.
Beth, thanks very much.
Thank you.
John Andrews, I appreciate your joining us today as well.
You're very welcome.
John Andrews is Paris bureau chief for The Economist magazine, and he was with us from his office in Paris. Needless to say, high-stakes game is being played out inside the White House. Joining us now to give us some insight into what may be happening behind the scenes are two former senior officials who worked in previous White House administrations. Richard Allen was President Reagan's first national security advisor. He joins us from his home in New Zealand, and it's tomorrow there already, but good to have you back on the program, sir.
Thank you. It's nice to be with you.
And Leon Panetta was chief of staff to President Clinton from 1994 to 1997. He's with us from his office in Monterey, California, and welcome back to you.
Good to be with you, Neil.
Richard Allen, let's begin with you. What's at stake for President Bush right now?
Well, his presidency, in a certain sense. He's rolling a lot of dice on this present issue of going to war with Iraq, and the enforcement of United Nations resolutions, probably finishing up something that should have been done 10 years ago. But right now, there's a lot at stake. That's in selfish terms when we speak of the presidency itself.
Sure.
Lives are at stake. A great deal of fortune is at stake. Perhaps the stability of the Middle East is at stake. And I think it's important to move on and to do what needs to be done, namely disarm Saddam Hussein and remove him and all his henchmen from power.
Leon Panetta, the decision has been taken. I guess the die will be cast tonight. From your experience at the White House, is this a moment of, you know, well, we're set. It's at least the decision has been made.
Well, I imagine that there's, at the same moment that I'm sure there's concern and anxiety about what these next few days will hold for the country and for our troops, that there is at least some sense that at least the decision has been made and the direction has now been set. I think that there was a period there when obviously there was still some hope that perhaps through diplomacy a way might be found out at the same time that the military was building up there. Now there's no question that with diplomacy having failed, that it is now a military operation, and to that extent, it creates a real focus both for the president and the country.
We're speaking with Leon Panetta, the former White House Chief of Staff to President Clinton, and Richard Allen, who was National Security Advisor to President Ronald Reagan. We're taking your calls at 800-989-8255, emails totn@npr.org. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I wanted to read an email that we got from Sue Lewandowski. She writes, "I hope President Bush will explain how we will be safer after a war with Iraq. Although it would have taken longer, I believe an extensive education/PR campaign directed at improving our image in the Far East while actively pursuing al-Qaeda terrorists would have been far more effective than what she describes as this dangerous cowboy tactic." Richard Allen, is that a concern for the president tonight? Should he explain how we'll be safer after this operation?
Well, I think that the president has done a remarkably good job of explaining already how we would be safer with the removal of Saddam Hussein. It is a constant puzzle to those of us who happen to support this president and the objectives that he's laid down, that there's an objection he hasn't made the case. I think the case has been made systematically. It's been done constructively. Colin Powell, Vice President Dick Cheney, Don Rumsfeld, and others have made this case as best they can. I don't know what remains now to be proven, except to overcome the fears and the concerns of people that we are doing the wrong thing. I think we're doing the right thing, and I think it's important that it be done efficiently, promptly, as swiftly as possible with minimum damage. We do know how to pick up the pieces. We haven't got all of the answers. There are unintended consequences. But we should and must move ahead in our national interest and for our own safety. I think the president has explained that and leaned on that explanation time after time, and people simply don't pay attention.
Leon Panetta, as Richard Allen suggests, if the president and his advisors and vice president and his cabinet officials, if they've made the case, there are a lot of people unconvinced.
Well, I think that's right. There are two problems. I think the tragedy is that I think, as Richard Allen said, that there is a legitimate cause here in disarming Saddam Hussein and eliminating his weapons of mass destruction. Clearly, that is a legitimate goal. But it's been clouded and undermined by, obviously, the failed diplomatic effort, a fractured UN, a weakened NATO, an alienation of our allies abroad, a sense of doing this alone. And the second area is that I think the president really has not talked about the risks involved with this war. The fact that we are going to confront the possibility of chemical and biological war and the casualties that may result from that, the dangers of growing terrorism that can impact here as well as abroad, a long-term occupation, a damaged relationship with the Arab world, and a cost to U.S. taxpayers that could run anywhere from $160 to $200 billion. Very little of that has been presented to the American people.
Go ahead, Richard Allen.
Could I just comment on that? Just one small rejoinder. I'm personally fascinated by the used to be argument, as many do, that we may be confronted with biological and chemical weapons. These are the very things that Saddam Hussein is supposed not to have. Imagine if we didn't move ahead. I think everyone anticipates the possibility of the use of these weapons, but if we didn't move ahead, the sword of Damocles that would be hanging over the entire region.
And Leon Panetta, that's one thing the president and other speakers have said consistently, that there are risks to doing nothing as well.
No question. But I do believe that he has not really talked about the potential of casualties as a result of chemical and biological war. I think, and it's not to say that we shouldn't do this. It's not to say that we shouldn't take military action here. But I think this country is smart enough to kind of be able to take the hard news, too, as to what the risks are. And I hope he does that tonight in his speech. We have not talked very much about the risks. There's not been a debate, either in the Senate or in the Congress or the country, for that matter, as to the risks involved with this war.
I certainly would disagree with that. I think the debate has been raging for months. And the decision of the president, whether under duress or whether of his own volition, to go to the United Nations last fall certainly was evidence of a heated debate. We continually hear the argument that there hasn't been a debate, but there has been a debate. Back in 1991, I might point out that Leon Panetta voted against House Joint Resolution 77, the use of force against Iraq, and he joined a large number of his colleagues, 183 of them, voted against it.
We have to take a short break now. When we come back, we'll continue talking with Richard Allen and Leon Panetta, and we'll take more of your calls. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. If you've just joined us, President Bush has scheduled an address to the nation, 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Eastern time tonight. Secretary of State Colin Powell said earlier today the president will issue an ultimatum to Saddam Hussein to leave the country along with his sons who are in power there and a few of other important government officials, or accept the possibility of an attack by U.S.-led forces who are gathering in Kuwait and other places around Iraq. Today we're talking about what looks to be a very imminent war. What are your concerns at this time? What do you want to hear from President Bush tonight when he addresses the country? Our phone number, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, our email address, TOTN@NPR.org. With us on the line is Richard Allen, a national security advisor to President Reagan, and Leon Panetta, former chief of staff to President Clinton. And wanted to go to a phone call, and let's be joined now by Adam, who's on the line in Auburn, Maine.
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I basically wanted to hear from President Bush tonight what kind of retribution he expects to feel in this country from Iraq. Obviously, from the statement that Saddam Hussein made the other day about taking the war anywhere where there is sky, land, sea, or air, I think that sends a pretty clear message that he plans some sort of attack or something like that in at least this country. And what do you guys think about that?
Leon Panetta, why don't we begin with you and note that similar statements came from Iraq before the start of the war in 1991.
Well, I think the difference is that al-Qaeda is out there, and there was a story in the front page of the New York Times that al-Qaeda will obviously use what happens in Iraq as a recruiting device. And I suspect that because of what happened on September 11th, that the danger is not so much from Saddam Hussein as it is from other members of the al-Qaeda or sympathizers to al-Qaeda who might try to take separate action. And that has pretty much been at least predicted on the part of the CIA. I think Tom Ridge has basically said that that's a danger in the event of war, and others have basically confirmed that the likelihood of terrorist attacks is something we just have to be prepared to handle in the event that we go to war in Iraq.
Richard Allen, is there any way for the president to prepare the country for the possibility of terrorist attacks?
Yes, I think so, and I think he will. I think Leon Panetta is correct. Basically, since the 11th of September, we've been faced with the prospect of terrorist actions. And, of course, all during the late 80s and the 90s, as terrorist incidents around the world began to accelerate, and we began to read of them and experience them with regularity, we've been exposed. I think right now we face a period of maximum exposure, individual operatives, sleeper cells, and others. And I do hope that the president is going to mention that tonight. I couldn't imagine the speech being to the address to the nation being complete without spelling out the very real possibility we may be attacked. I think that regardless of the actions we take in Iraq, we are exposed to such terrorist actions from now on. Life has changed.
Adam, thanks very much.
I have one quick more question.
Okay, go ahead.
Would this possibly start a jihad?
My view is that we are in a rolling jihad, and it has become very clear to us in the last 2 years that we'll have to deal with it, and we'll have to react to it. We can't anticipate everything. We can't. Our intelligence services are still not good enough to predict what will happen and to take action in a timely way. So we're at risk always.
No question that we're in for a period of disruption, and we are going to see our relations with the Muslim world deteriorate for a period here. Hopefully, we'll find the answer to dealing with terrorists and terrorism. But I think for the next few years, we're going to be confronting this war on all fronts.
Thanks very much, Adam.
Thank you.
How much depends on how the war turns out? I mean, if it's quick, if large stocks of chemical and biological weapons are discovered, if all of the assumptions about that Iraq was doing turn out to have been vindicated in a relatively quick war, how much difference would that make, Leon Panetta?
I think it'll make a great deal of difference. Obviously, if it's a short war in duration and we, in fact, find chemical and biological weapons that were hidden by Saddam Hussein and are able to uncover those and basically ratify what we've been concerned about, I think that'll send a tremendous signal to the rest of the world that that this action was justified. On the other hand, if it becomes a long war of duration and we become bogged down in that part of the world and face these other acts of terrorism, that could be a very different story. Mm-hmm.
Richard Allen, we saw scenes of troops being welcomed in Kabul. Should we expect the same in Baghdad?
It's hard to say. I would say yes. I think Saddam Hussein will not stay in Baghdad. I think because of the population skew, namely a lot of Shiites in and around Baghdad, that he'll probably leave and go to his home city of Tikrit or secrete himself someplace else. But I do believe that we will be welcomed as liberators. And I also agree with Leon Panetta that if this war is short, it does everything, including provide us the basis for the restoration of more decent relations with our allies, the French and the Germans, who I think have behaved absolutely miserably recently.
Hmm. Let's get another phone call. Gregory's on the line with us from San Diego.
Yes, Neil, thank you for having me on. Just briefly, I think I would like to hear the president address or send a firm message to the Israeli government regarding the occupation in the Palestinian territories. I feel that after this short war with Iraq, the United States will have occupation in Iraq for quite some time, and I think those two situations parallel. And the fact that the Israeli government in those occupied territories, that will, that's the deep root, the call for terrorism. I'd like to hear your panel address that issue, please.
Okay. Richard Allen, obviously the president did issue a statement about the roadmap ahead just the other day.
Yes, he did. And there's no question in my mind about the earnestness of the administration in trying to do something. The issues are linked, I believe, but not directly. In post-Saddam Iraq, I believe that the face of the Middle East can be shaped in a positive and constructive way. And I do believe that the administration is serious about moving ahead. One of the conditions, of course, that the president has laid down in this roadmap, and I think everyone else is in agreement, that there will be no more settlements. And that would more or less address the question that was just put to us. I do believe also that the roadmap makes sense. Everyone's for it, and that the shoulders of everyone will be put behind it once Saddam is dealt with.
Leon Panetta, a lot of people in the Middle East said of the president's statement, nice words, but given the timing, they're a little skeptical.
But understandably so. I think there is this theory that I don't think makes a great deal of sense, that somehow winning the war in Iraq and establishing a presence there will ultimately convert Iraq into this great new democracy. It'll be a symbol to the rest of the Arab world about what will happen. Even the State Department has rejected that possibility. And that also, as a result of that, suddenly we'll find peace in the Middle East, and the Palestinians and the Israelis will ultimately cut a deal. Anybody who's dealt with the Middle East knows that that whole collision between Israel and the Palestinians is a huge task that demands personal attention on an ongoing basis, and that ultimately the war in Iraq, whatever happens there, it still is going to depend on the diplomatic ability of the United States to engage both parties and to work with both parties on an even-handed basis. That's the only way you bring peace to the Middle East.
Gregory, thanks very much.
Thank you, Nick.
Wanted to ask you both. We just have a couple of minutes left. If you just got a call from the White House, this minute, what message would you urge the president to deliver tonight? Richard Allen, you first.
Well, a full and complete assessment of what needs to be done, a full disclosure of the risks, the costs, as Leon Panetta had earlier pointed out, the costs of doing the job, staying with it, and rehabilitating post-Saddam Iraq. I think that the president needs to lay all of that out, and he has to provide his own roadmap tonight for the American people. I think that he won't miss that opportunity.
Leon Panetta?
Well, I would agree with Richard. I think that in this instance, the president really has to, again, remind the American people what brought us to this point, the fact that the 1441 resolution was passed. It was passed unanimously by the Security Council, that Saddam Hussein needs to be disarmed as a result of that, but that there are risks that are involved here in costs and terrorism and other issues that ultimately need to be recognized by the American people. But I think the American people always unify in these situations, and hopefully that will be the case after the president's speech.
Leon Panetta, thanks very much for being with us today. Leon Panetta is former chief of staff to President Clinton. He was on the line with us from his office in Monterey, California. Richard Allen, good of you to get up early in the morning to speak with us.
Nice to be with you. Thank you.
Richard Allen was National Security Advisor to President Reagan, and he was with us from his home in New Zealand. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.